From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this number one rated late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the God part of the brain. Here's what's happening. Out of Wyoming, a parasitic amoeba that causes deadly brain infections has turned up in a warm spring in Grand Teton National Park, prompting a warning for those seeking a soak. The microscopic amoeba typically occurs in the southern U.S., not the Rocky Mountain West. Even so, officials have announced tests confirming that the amoeba is in the Kelly Warm Spring, a very popular soaking hole in the park. Look out, something's happening. Just a couple days ago, we heard the story of a little 11-year-old girl who died swimming in a river. She was only in that water for just a short time. Listen to this story. How sick can people get? A woman and her ex-husband in North Carolina have been charged over the weekend with attempted murder after they beat an amputee, nearly killing him, before taking off with cash, his SUV, and his titanium prosthetic leg. They've been caught. Gosh. Japan has ordered its military to be ready at any time to shoot down any North Korean missiles that threaten to strike Japan, putting its forces on a state of alert for at least 3 months. Things getting tense over there. Security firm Checkpoint has identified vulnerabilities affecting 900 million smartphones and tablets that use chipsets from component maker Qualcomm. Checkpoint disclosed the vulnerabilities at a hacking conference in Las Vegas. The four vulnerabilities, dubbed Quad Router by Checkpoint, affect Android devices using chipsets from component maker Qualcomm. Chipsets are collections of components or circuits that handle data flow within a device. Lorne Weinstein, an expert on technology for us. What's this all mean, Lorne?
Yeah, I should give my standard disclaimer first, since this relates to Android, and that's Google, that I have consulted for them in the past. I'm not doing so now, and everything I'm about to say is strictly my opinion.
Okay.
The situation is that smartphones are really complicated. And you have all these different layers. There's layers of software, there's layers of hardware, there's layers of firmware, there's layers that are in between the layers. And as you noted, in this particular case, the problems appear to be have started and been embedded within certain Qualcomm chipsets. Most of those problems, as I understand it, have now been fixed in regular security updates that have come out since then. But it's an ongoing kind of problem. It doesn't just affect Android. It affects iOS, Apple's system, too. One of the things to keep in mind about this is that the way people usually get into trouble with these kinds of vulnerabilities is that they run sketchy apps, sketchy applications. And by that I mean, in the case of Android, for example, if you don't, you should take all your apps from the Google Play Store. Because Google has all kinds of systems in there. They scan the apps for vulnerabilities and for malware and for problems. And, you know, they're not 100%, but they're really, really good at finding those. But what some people do is they sideload apps. And sideloading means, like, you download an application from some other source, not from the Play Store. You put it on your PC. You hook a cable up to your phone, and you load it that way. You can do that. You have to uncheck some of the security features in the phone to do it. And if you really know what you're doing, if you're a developer, if you're doing testing, that kind of thing, that's okay. But if you don't know what you're doing and you just see some app out there that you can sideload, you say, boy, that really looks cool, don't do it, because that's how you get the apps in that take advantage of these vulnerabilities in the chipsets. And as a general rule, you know, it's not a bad idea if you see an app even on the Play Store or in the Apple world in the App Store. If it just looks too good to be true, you know, it just seems like an app that's promising things that are impossible, stay away from it. I mean, if you use common sense with these things,
that helps.
You have a much better chance of avoiding these kinds of problems.
God, what it tells you, though, Lorne, is how vulnerable we are to all these possibilities out there.
Yeah, and I think part of what makes this so difficult is we're not, as a culture, we're not used to individuals having to take so much responsibility in terms of making these kinds of decisions? I mean, how much thought did you have to give into, you know, you buy a refrigerator, right? You worry about whether the ice cubes are coming out properly from the freezer or something. We're not used to having to make these kinds of technically oriented decisions. And while the firms are trying, you know, they're succeeding. The situation is actually getting a lot better with these security issues. But that doesn't mean we don't have personal responsibility still.
Good point. Thanks, Lauren. Every year in August, the Earth passes through a stream of debris from Comet Swift-Tuttle, the source of the annual Perseid meteor shower. It's amazing to look at. Here's astronomer Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky with us. I bet this is part of your report.
Hi, George. What an amazing week this is going to be. And folks, within the sound of our voices, you know what to do. Look into the northeast sky. Just around this time, all the way till dawn, George, we're getting reports from people all over the northern hemisphere saying that indeed they're seeing well over 50 meteors per hour. But the exciting thing about this shower this week is astronomers are telling us that we probably have, or we may have indeed, an opportunity to see an outburst of this particular shower. When and where? On the night of August 11th, Thursday night, if you look into the northeast and follow that area we call the radiant, my eyes, if I were a betting man, would be to the northeast sky right around 11 p.m. And if things are going our way, George, the reason for this outburst is that this particular comet, as you mentioned, Swift-Tuttle, has been passing the sun for so long. And Jupiter might be a good advantageous friend in this case, meaning a lot of the material from the 1079 A.D. passage of the comet, the 1479 A.D. passage, and the 1862 A.D., planet Jupiter may simply have tugged that material closer in toward the Earth. Now, this is a possibility. So astronomers are saying there may be double the rates. So if you're in a dark sky and you're looking up into the sky, don't forget the moon is growing in size. So right around 1:30 in the morning on that peak night, after that moon sets, George, the sky literally could rain a very unexpected outburst. And we'll be keeping an eye on that. But in our live sky, just very briefly, for the listeners, this week I've selected these objects. Look into the south just as the sun sets, and you'll see Mars. You'll see a close star to the lower left, Antares, the supergiant, 600 light-years away in Scorpius. To the upper left of that beautiful equilateral triangle is the planet Saturn. The star right above Mars, if you're looking at it now, or will in the next day or two, is Delta Scorpii, some 400 light-years away. Makes an amazing pre-meteor shower view, George, and wow, get out there, folks, and take a look at the Perseids, because we could have outburst, and you heard it first here on Coast.
You got it, Stephen. Thanks. You keep busy, and you've got great events going on all around the country. You're one of a kind, my friend.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate that, and we'll be checking in with you soon.
All right. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. While this could be a sign of things to come, thousands of Delta Airline passengers were stuck in airports all around the world trying to get out on flights after a power outage crippled the airline's global computer systems for hours. Delta canceled more than 420 flights by the afternoon, more than 1,000 delayed. What a disaster all around the planet. Up next, William Forstgen joins us, author of One Year After and One Second After. What happens if an X-flare or an EMP hits the planet, wipes out the solar grid? What happens? We're going to talk with him and get updates on how we're trying to fix the grid next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, PhD and best-selling author Dr. William Forstgen, received his PhD from Purdue University, specializes in military history and the history of technology. He's been a college professor for nearly 25 years, author of more than 40 books, two of the most important, One Year After and One Second After, about the possibilities of a disaster, the power grid going out when an EMP attack, and he'll explain what that is, and a solar flare might hit us directly, taking out the power grid. Now, he resides in North Carolina, and he will be one of our special guests in our live program in Asheville, North Carolina, on August 27th. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later on. But, William, welcome back.
Always a pleasure to be with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Asheville, North Carolina.
That's going to be fun. Theaters is almost sold out already, and I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you're a pro, and it's fun to chat with you at these live events.
And you got Josh Warren joining us as well, I think.
Yep. Also, Micah Hanks on UFOs.
Excellent.
So, first of all, brief everybody who happens to be new to the program what an EMP and an CME is.
EMP, electromagnetic pulse, generated by the detonation of a relatively low-yield nuclear weapon, not much more than what was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 73 years ago now. Detonated above the Earth's atmosphere, the gamma ray burst coming off of the bomb, as it hits the upper atmosphere, starts breaking loose free electrons. It's known as the Compton effect. That cascades down to the Earth's surface at the speed of light, hits all of the electrical wiring. Now, every wire can not only transmit electricity, but can also act as an antenna. So it picks up this electrical overload, feeds it through the grid, short circuits most of the systems off, and literally 1 second after, your grid is down. The repair time, well, it's just not there. A lot of very high-level people have been evaluating this ever since a congressional report came out in 2004. I urge your listeners, if you're wondering about this, you want to dig in a bit further, just Google up EMP Congressional Report 2004 for far more technical discussion. What will happen then is, estimates are that 5 years after such an attack, 80% of our generating capacity would still be offline.
Jeez.
But the bad number is 80% of the power grid would be off 5 years later, but 90% of the population of America would be gone.
Within a year?
Actually, within about a year. Congressional studies of 04 and 08 indicated casualty rate of that level. And that's what got me started writing on the book, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. But to answer the rest of your question, a CME basically triggers the same thing, coronal mass ejection. All the time, the sun is throwing out large, what are known as coronal mass ejections. They're happening all the time. And it's sort of like a couple of pinballs going around on a big court where sooner or later one of them is going to hit the other. Coronal mass ejection hits the magnetosphere of the Earth, distorts it, can even punch its way through. You have the same event taking place, a massive electrical overload striking not just, say, the continental United States under attack, but the entire world. Can take out, the best comparison is the Carrington event. That's something else you can Wikipedia, C-A-R-R-I-N-G. Mm-hmm.
That was in the late 1800s, right?
1859. And the Carrington event was such a large CME that it blew out the Victorian Internet, the telegraphy systems that were just starting to really come online in a big way in North America and Europe. The telegraphy stations, they had fires blowing out. It was so intense that railroad ties, the tar-covered wooden ties that were being used at that time for railroads, were bursting into flame.
Jeez.
From the overload running down the iron rails. It would be a global catastrophe.
We've been lucky. We've dodged a few CMEs, haven't we?
Well, you and I have been chatting about this on and off for years, and I remember a couple of programs where your folks called me up and said, you got some time tonight because there's a major CME, and I follow it. I have an alert system on my computer. Yeah, we've had a couple of very close calls. There was one, George, I think it was about 2 years back in midsummer, where it was a 1-2 punch of two CMEs that the Earth had been but 2 or 3 days backwards in its orbit. It would have hit us square on. And frankly, you and I would not be talking right now. In fact, the whole world would no longer be talking because the whole electrical infrastructure of the world would have gone down with it. So we've been having a lot of close calls.
Ironically, tomorrow will be the 71st anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki. That happened on August 9th, 1945. And a couple days before that was Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. So in 71 years, Bill, 71 years, what have we learned about the possibilities of some rogue nation, some country setting off an EMP?
Well, George, you and I were products of we grew up during the Cold War. People think about nuclear weapons. They thought about the city busters, the multi-megaton attack.
the age of what was known as MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction, in which the Soviets had thousands of warheads, we had thousands of warheads, hitting each other's cities and military bases. But in 1962, we did a test. It's known as Starfish Prime, where we lofted a missile up off of Johnson Island, about 500 miles south of the Hawaiian chain, detonated above the atmosphere, and to everyone's surprise, it started blowing off part of the power grid in Oahu. That same year, give or take some months, the Soviets did the same thing, typically over their own territory in Kazakhstan. It's known as Soviet Test 184, and had the same effect. In fact, it blew out one power station 500 miles away from the epicenter. So even as we're thinking about the city-busting impact, in reality, you don't need thousands of weapons to take an opponent down. 2, 3, 5 warheads over the continental United States would be just as devastating, and in some ways, more devastating, because rather than all of us suddenly, you know, we'll meet again type of thing, and you remember at the end of Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, with all the grid down, 90% of us will be dying a very slow death across the following year.
And the deaths occur because you can't pump water to people, food shortages, riots, murders, mayhem, everything collapses.
Well, let's take it to like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay, what we need most of all is oxygen. Deny that for 3 minutes, you're gone.
You're gone.
But we move down that line a little bit, water. Well, folks who are listening in Phoenix, Arizona right now, where do you get your water from? Or Denver, or Dallas, or almost anywhere? It's electrical pumping. Out in L.A., where does that water come from? The Colorado River, amongst other sources. So imagine.
But it's all electrical.
It's all electrical. You got it. So you walk into your supermarket the next day and you're going, you know, I better get some water. Well, isn't everybody else in the city thinking the same thing?
The shelves are gone. Look, I know growing up in the Midwest, Bill, that during a winter blizzard, people rush to the stores, right? And they get milk and they take the bread. Those shelves are empty. They're gone within a matter of hours. So, you know, the first guys in, they're going to get something for a while. But the people after that, they're out of luck.
Well, let's just start running down the list. Okay, let's say it happened right now, and all of our listeners, I better get to the store. Well, a fair percentage of you, your cars aren't going to function because the EMP will affect the electrical computer systems within your car, shuts them down.
And you may run out of gasoline. You can't pump that either.
Or beyond that, let's say you actually got a car that runs, you pull up to the gas station, and let's say somehow they got a pump running. How are you going to pay for it? Or for that matter, how much might the person then at that moment say, do you have $100, but paper money doesn't matter anymore because the ATMs are down.
And your credit cards don't work. That's right. Just a disaster of biblical proportions. And in terms of media, I mean, we've got generators, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what about some of the local stations that carry our radio show? And what about the people who may not have a self-winding Sea Crane radio, for example, and they may not be able to get anything? They can't plug their radio in because there's no power. The whole thing collapses like a set of dominoes, doesn't it?
Electricity is the fundamental building block of our entire world today. We go back prior to 1870. Some people say, well, it would be like we were thrown back to the 19th century. However, folks living in 1870 knew how to live in 1870. That's the world they lived in. We don't know how to live without electricity. We're so entirely dependent upon it, from where you're sitting in your studio to me sitting in a climate-controlled house with electrical lighting and talking on this phone. It's all gone.
William Forstjen, our special guest, a couple of his books, One Second After, which shocked the world, and then One Year After as well. We're going to come back in a moment with William and talk about what are the major presidential candidates saying about this, if anything, and then what's going on. As you know, we've been trying to push this for about a year and a half now to get legislation passed to fix the power grid. And the estimate is about $2 billion just to really fix it and perfect it. That's chump change. We should be doing that right now as a security measure. We're going to come back in a moment with William Forstchen on Coast to Coast AM. William Forstchen with us. We're going to take calls with William next hour as well as we talk about EMPs and coronal mass ejections. And he will be one of my live stage show guests in Asheville, North Carolina on August 27th. And full details available for you by going to coasttocoastam.com and just click the picture of the Asheville, North Carolina event. That'll take you to the theater's website and then look for the August 27th event. When you click buy tickets, there's 31 tickets still left on the bottom level, and then there's some on the balcony level. George Norrie back with you along with William Forstchen as we talk about EMPs and CMEs. William, presidential campaigns hot and underway. Are any of the major candidates, there are four out there now, the Green Party, Libertarian, Republican, Democrat, are any of them talking about this?
Oh, gosh, do we really want to talk about politics?
I don't want to talk about politics. I want to talk about saving this country.
All right. I got into the whole issue in 2004 because of a friendship with Newt Gingrich. And meeting with him on the day, actually, the 2004 report came out that I referenced in our last segment. And the following day, he hooked me up with the person who headed up that committee, Congressman Roscoe Bartlett. And Bartlett hit it precisely. He said, the problem is there's no constituency pressing for the issue of EMP. And that was 12 years ago. The first book I wrote on this came out 7 years ago. The Republican Party has put in its platform this year that the issue of EMP from terrorism must be addressed, and the beefing up of our infrastructure against terrorist hits and also CME. That is in the Republican platform. You can look it up online. I haven't seen anything from the other parties.
Okay. We had Peter Pry on the program several months ago. He's trying. Where do we stand with either legislation or some kind of effort to get something done here?
You better have your finger on the delete button in a second, because I might go into a Tourette moment.
Well, don't do that to me.
Okay. It is incredibly frustrating. I've known Peter Pry for 12 years. The guy is a hero. He has been inside the Beltway banging his head against that wall for almost 20 years on this issue. I know of two cases where it got through the House and then it was shelved in the Senate. And we can thank a Senate leader from a couple of years ago for tying up so many different bills, of which an EMP issue was one. We're still gridlocked on it. Nothing has been effectively done for the civilian infrastructure. There has been, as you know, and some of your listeners will know, Cheyenne Mountain, the old NORAD center, is currently being beefed up with a $1 billion investment to make it completely EMP hardened. But for the rest of us, we got a big kick me sign hanging on us right now. I want to see this as a presidential debate item. I'm hoping that will come to pass.
You would think one of the candidates would just say, folks, of everything we've been doing, this is one of the most critical things facing us as Americans. It's only $2 billion. Maybe it's gone up to $3 billion. Big deal, right? After what we're talking about that they're going to spend. And let's get this done. It should be a major priority.
It's a no-brainer, George, and okay.
It is a no-brainer.
I'm trying to control my anger because...
Be calm.
We're talking about tens of trillions of dollars of infrastructure, but a investment, be it $2 billion or $20 billion, or let us say even $100 billion. The simple analogy of this, you have a house worth $250,000. Are you going to spend $500 to $700 a year on insurance? Heck yeah. You'd be insane not to. In fact, you can't carry a mortgage without that insurance. Well, is it not the same thing? Your house is insured. Your car is insured. Should not your nation be insured and the life of you and your children be insured? And the government has failed utterly on that.
And we hear more and more about these lunatics running some of these countries that are dabbling with the potential of atomic weapons. You would know that they would want to just launch something and detonate it in the atmosphere.
Well, the news out today, Japan has made a very clear statement to North Korea because North Korea is splashed.
They're going to knock down their missiles if they have to.
They're going to start knocking them down, and the Japanese have Aegis capability, and they can do it. We should have been doing that 8-9 years ago when the North Koreans first started experimenting with intermediate range.
We should never have allowed them to have the capability in the first place.
Or for that
how
matter,
in the world did they get nukes?
Because in the 1990s, and I'll point the finger straight at it, the Clinton administration allowed it to happen. They allowed it to happen.
And they knew it was happening, right? Or were they that stupid to know that it wasn't?
I was sitting in then Congressman Gingrich's office on a day when there was a conversation with the White House in which that was the topic. It's like, with Newt saying, I can't believe you're going to allow this to continue. Once they have nukes, they will have the leverage. And realize, we hear from the current administration, oh, 1, 2, 3, 5 nukes, or what the heck, even Iran. How can they possibly threaten us? An EMP is a first strike weapon. You only need 2 or 3 to take the United States off the map in an opening first strike move that will make Pearl Harbor and 9/11 look like a kindergarten or Sunday school show.
Today, 20 Homeland Security ex-members, primarily Republicans, all came out and attacked Donald Trump, saying that he's just not capable of being our commander-in-chief. He's dangerous. Trump should listen to this program, and he should come out tomorrow with a platform to protect the power grid is one of the first things he'll do as president. And I bet a lot of people would start looking at him as a commander-in-chief who knows what he's talking about.
Have you been reading my email to Newt?
because you've had them on Hillary's server, and I get all those.
Well said. Bravo. Yeah, putting those that I'm sending these things out. It's yes, that's the point I've been hammering. I was praying that during the Republican National Convention, that would have been said from the podium. I didn't expect it at all from the DNC. But the candidate who comes out first and loudly says, we're going to beef up our infrastructure, we're going to have a robust foreign policy, we're not going to let North Korea or Iran do what they are openly saying they're going to do, he'll have millions of people who are already active preppers on his side.
Yeah, and he needs that right now.
Yes.
You know, he's down by 8 to 10 points, depending on what poll you look at. Reuters says he's only down by 3. But the point is, he's down, and he needs some kind of boost to get people to realize that he knows what he's talking about. Because unless he can convince people that he is a commander-in-chief, that he can do this, he's going to have problems.
And you would think, for a guy, now this is where I grew up, the New York City area, and you can tell it by the way I talk at times. He's the greatest developer in New York City in the 80s and the 90s, and those few times when New York City had a power blip, even for several hours, or right after Sandy, a couple days without power from lower Manhattan down across Staten Island.
Disaster.
He saw it firsthand. Now imagine that for the entire nation.
I'm disappointed that President Obama, in his 8 years, has done nothing about the power grid. Nothing.
I'm not surprised, though.
It's disappointing. You know, I think we elect people to protect us, to do the right thing for us, and that's not happening. It's not happening from any party.
Isn't that in the opening lines of the Constitution, to provide for the common defense?
Yeah, you would think so. The first book came out 1 second after, about 7 years ago, wasn't it?
March of 2009. And
yeah,
started working on it in 2004. So this has been front and center for me for 12 years now.
Okay. And then 1 year after came,
mm-hmm.
And that scared the living daylights out of me, William.
I scared you?
Yeah.
You usually scare me. So tell me why I scared you.
Well, because it brought home everything that you talked about in 1 second after. And when you think of that possibility, 300 million Americans, 90% of them dead within a year, And by the way, those 10% who think they're going to survive much longer than that, that ain't going to happen either. So, you know, you're talking about the possibility of everything being wiped out, except for those elitists who have already created their little bunkers and generators and everything else. They're ready to go and head for the hills. But most people aren't ready for something like this.
And even within the active prepper community, thinking much beyond a year or two starts to just run into a wall.
I got an email from some guy 10 minutes ago, and he said, why are you trying to scare people? I'm going to let you answer that for me. Go ahead.
Why am I trying to scare people? Well, suppose it was November 1941, and you and I were on the radio. I said, you know, the Japanese have the capacity to pretty well overrun the Pacific, kill millions of people. They're already waging a war of aggression in China, in which entire cities are being annihilated. America, don't you think it's time we got ready for something?
And then somebody who would be a other guest on the show would say, nah, come on, that's not going to happen. They don't want to go to war with us.
Well, there was a news item today about the body of a Marine who died on Tarawa in 1943, finally being returned home today. Go tell it to the Marines that had to hit all those beaches from Guadalcanal to Okinawa and preparing to invade Japan. Tell it to them. Tell it to the 300,000 families who lost sons and fathers that we could have prevented it before it ever happened, but we didn't have the guts to do it or face reality.
And we need to. So what do we need to do? You and me, the power of this show, Peter Pry, to get these candidates talking about this.
I just got recruited in to a study group for my congressman, Congressman Meadows, out of Western North Carolina. And the study group has pretty well concurred that the number one priority, I guess in part influenced a bit by me, is the issue of infrastructure protection and EMP. If, regardless of let's just talk to Republicans for a moment. Whether you like Trump or not, this election is also about your congressmen and your senators. And I'll appeal to all listeners, libertarian, green, Democrat, whatever. You make infrastructure protection a top priority. And then you tell the candidates, I want to hear about this so you don't have my vote. If but 1 or 2% of the voting population of America turned that into an issue, believe me, they would be listening.
Well, and I would hope that one of the moderators at the major presidential debates when they start would have the knowledge and the guts to bring this up as a question for both major candidates, and because I assume only two of them will be invited. They should invite all four. Maybe they will, but I don't think so. But they should ask that question to each major candidate. What are you going to do about insulating the power grid? And I bet both of those candidates would look at each other like, what's he talking about? I don't think they know. Yet.
Yeah. When you and I started talking about this 7 years ago, it did seem to most people to be sci-fi. I can recall letters coming into you and to me and emails and everything else that this was sci-fi stuff in articles in New Republic and others, but suddenly the Wall Street Journal is wading in on it and saying this is a real issue. New York Times even acknowledged it was a real issue. Mainstream media is catching on a bit. So I think we have a far better educated public, particularly thanks to, and I'm not just blowing smoke, thanks to you, because you reach so many listeners. And I've heard so many people say later, you know, I heard you on Coast to Coast, and it got me thinking.
Well, you're the one that did it. UNF Maloof did it. He had a lot to do with this too, with his work. And I
Ted
saw
Koppel's recent book is a really
well. I had Ted book. On, had him on a few months ago, and I mean he's concerned about hacking the grid, but nonetheless, it's an attack on our entire way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And for God's sakes, you know, for your family and for everything else, folks, you got to start waking up and telling your congressmen and your senators to do something about this. And if you're on a committee with Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or Gary Johnson, the libertarian, Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, just start telling them about this because they've got to wake up. Have you gotten your book in their hands?
Yes, I actually have. And Roscoe Bartlett, when he was in Congress, copies of the book went to every single member of both the House and the Senate. And then thanks to Newt, it wound up in the hands of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. A friend of mine was in the Pentagon. He said, there were hundreds of people walking around with your book one day because the command came from top down. So people are aware of it, but it's not the priority. A 20-second example. During this time, Congress passed the law outlawing the ownership of chimpanzees. Now, why do I bring that up? Because people might recall one woman had her face torn off by a chimpanzee.
Oh, it was horrible.
It was horrible. It affected one person, but it had a constituency because she was on Oprah and everything else. And there was a, oh, we got to outlaw this. Meanwhile, upwards of 300 million of us might very well die, and there's been no action yet. But if enough citizens listening to this show tonight set their both candidates tomorrow, I want this as an issue, you might start turning the tide.
Well, we're going to have to do that because there is no other way out because it's going to happen. If it's not an X flare from the sun, it's an EMP attack from some rogue nation. Now, here's my $64,000 question to you. It's all speculation. Of those two possibilities, which one do you think is the more probable?
Both, actually, and I'm not trying to dodge around it. How many times in the last year has Iran actually clearly said, we are going to bathe America in nuclear debt, and has specifically said they're going to EMP us? And then on the other side of the Eurasian landmass, you have an absolute psychotic nut job running a psychotic country who has clearly said he's going to take America off the map.
And putting out videos showing what it looks like.
Yes. There's only one way for both of them to hit us effectively, and that's through an EMP. I feel it's almost inevitable. Statistically, we go to CME, Carrington event. The gentleman you had on earlier, who great explanation about the meteorite show later this
week. Yeah, Dr. Sky.
Yeah, I asked him, what's the statistical probability regarding us getting hit? And he almost likely tell you, between 75 to every 150 years, there is a massive event.
See, I think even before the Carrington event, William, we probably got these X flares, big ones, a lot, but we didn't have any electricity, so nobody knew what happened.
Nobody knew what the heck was going on. The only giveaway was Aurora Borealis.
That's right. It looked pretty.
Yeah, all the way down to the Virgin Islands in the 1859 event.
Well, maybe we should start a new campaign and get this fixed. But you know what? I would hate to be the one, and so would you, to say, I told you so. I don't want to have to say that.
Yeah. You know, one of the areas I've studied from when I was a kid was the American Civil War. And everybody back then said it was going to be over within 90 days, one battle. And close to 700,000 Americans died in that one. And all those cemeteries by the end of that war, there was not a family in America that was not impacted. And how many people stood there numb?
Exactly. You know, and I'd love for people to test this, William. Go for without power for one day. One day. Unplug everything, your refrigerator, your television. Go without power for one day. And don't use water because it doesn't work. And see what happens. It'll be a disaster. We're going to come back in a moment with William Forstgen. It'll be his final hour with us. We will take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.